to me your secrets. Show me your nightmares. All cats are gray in the dark, dear. Whether or not you dare.
Welcome to All Cats Are Gray in the Dark. I'm your host, April Simmons. This podcast contains true cases of graphic violent crimes and other stories of a dark nature. Please be advised that due to the subject matter and violent, sometimes sexual content and obscene language, this podcast is not for children or the faint of heart.
All right, well, at this point, I think I had got to the airport. Wow. Can't even talk about it properly. Okay.
Also, if you're just now tuning in, you probably want to go back and listen to the previous episode so you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, definitely part one is really important. So yeah, she stayed on the phone with me my entire drive, parked at the airport, still had the presence of mind to at least take a picture of where I parked because I didn't actually know when I was going to be home. So I parked the car and was waiting on the little trolley to go to the actual airport. So I smoked another cigarette. I don't even think you were supposed to, but I was like, let somebody say something to me while I'm smoking at this little bus stop in a parking garage. And so I smoked, and then the little thing showed up, and I went through security and everything. Luckily, didn't pack anything stupid. Went about my business and waited to board the flight. Flights went on perfectly normal. I was actually able to sleep a little bit because, like, we boarded our flight and I actually even paid the extra money to, like, board early so I could get a window seat. And so I was, like, one of the first, like, five people on the plane. I just immediately got in a seat, got comfortable, and passed out. And then I would wake up and they're like, we're going to be delayed a little bit. There's some engine lights on, we've got to get checked out. So, like, I'm a really anxious traveler in general. And of course, I've got healthy fear of flights from, like, watching too much Lost and Bermuda Final Triangle stuff. Yeah, too much stuff.
All that stuff.
I did not even care. I was just like, okay, and then went back to sleep. So, like, my flight was actually delayed, like, a good hour where we were just sitting there, but I was sleeping the entire time through it. And then we took off, and then I passed back out. I would be in and out of sleep. And would wake up and cry again sitting there at these poor people sitting next to me. I'm just over there smelling like smoke and crying and sleeping on and off. And then, you know, got off the plane. And so I had a layover in Nashville because I was taking the little flight from Nashville to Tupelo. And so then I was sitting in Nashville waiting. Turns out they have a smoking lounge. So then I paid the like $10 to use the smoking lounge. And I was talking to my aunt and was letting her know, like, hey, I've landed in Nashville, and was talking to her through text about everything, and, you know, said, like, hey, are they gonna, like, are we allowed to, like, go to the house or do anything? Because, like, at that point, we didn't, like, really know a whole lot. We just knew the foul play aspect, and she said, no, you can go in. Like, Uncle Steve has the keys. And I'm like, so what is making you guys think foul play? And she just said, well, like, there's some chairs strewn about. It looked like a struggle, and because of the amount of blood, I'm like, what? And she said, well, I can send you pictures. And I'm like, I had to really think about that. Like, do I really want this on my phone? Do I want to see this? Like, cause I hadn't really thought that far. Like, when you think about people dying, you don't think about, like, what's there. You think, like, it's just taken care of. Like, I don't know, it's in and out of my mind. Like, I've seen enough movies, like, to know, like, there is a crime scene and there's tape and everything is still there. But I hadn't really let myself think about that. And so, but I ultimately decided, like, I'd probably rather be prepared by a picture than just, like, straight up seeing things first. So she sent me the picture, and she encouraged me, like, don't let April go. Don't let April see it. I don't know that she can handle it. I don't know why people think I can handle something more. I'm just as mentally as unstable, just a different type, as we've discussed. And I'm the younger one. I'm still like confused and slightly offended.
I don't remember you telling me that aspect, but
yeah. But yeah, I think they wanted to protect you, and I'm just like, what? All right, thanks. I'm the cold, heartless sister, apparently. But yeah, so we, you know, so she sent me the pictures, and then I immediately called you, and I was just like, she sent pictures. Holy shit, fuck, are you ready? So I sent it to you, and we both just kind of were like, what the fuck? This looks fucked up. This looks so wrong. What the fuck?
Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately, like, we thankfully have never seen anything super horrible, gory in real life.
Well, yeah, not in real life. But I had seen plenty of crime scene pictures and stuff like that. But I guess I'd not seen that level of decomp before. So...
Yeah. And when we say pictures, we're not talking about his actual body. We're talking about the outline left by his decomposing body and the amount of blood that was there. But it was pictures of, you know, the surrounding area. It was very, you know, broken chairs near him. You could definitely tell it was him. That sounds awful, but he at some point was taking hormones. So he had a little bit of breasts, and it was his outline was that level detailed that I could tell it was him, which made it all way worse.
It made it more real, you know, because the whole thing seemed like some kind of weird nightmare at first, the whole thing.
Yeah. And so there I am sitting, like, waiting on my next flight, crying some more and hoping nobody can, like, see what I'm looking at over my shoulder. And just crying again, because it just, like you said, made it more real. I could see it in my head. I could see that he had been laying there for a while. And that part of the grief hits me a lot. I mean, I know we've talked, again, some of the stuff we're going to kind of repeat, because, like, it's just, some of the stuff stays in our head. But, like, I started having that real guilt, especially facing some of my own mental issues right now, like, and they seem simple and small compared to what he was dealing with, but, you know, like potential ADHD, OCD problems, PTSD issues, depression issues. Like, he had a lot of those things. He had learning disabilities. We don't know what to what level, because our parents weren't open at all. The most we know is that he had PTSD from Vietnam, and that he had, you know, was possibly manic depressive. Like, but I've never seen documents about him. Like, our dad was so wishy-washy and painted his own narrative. We don't know what was real or not.
Yeah.
We don't know that some of the stories he's told us was real, because we couldn't trust him.
Well, he was getting disability, not just for all of that stuff, but also supposedly he got sprayed with Agent Orange. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what we were told, is that he was sprayed with Agent Orange.
Yeah. So he was diabetic. He had like a shunt put in his spine. Like, he had all sorts of things going on. And especially now, like, his mental issues, like, I think, I don't know what a proper term for this is, but he definitely had a learning disability. He sounded slower in speech and mental faculties. He had that. He obviously had the depressive issues. He could flip on a switch from night and day, nicest, wanted to do everything for you, loved you, was so proud, and the next minute you were a piece of shit. You were shithead is what he called me most of my life. Yeah. He would hit you. He would kick you out of places. I mean, like, you just never knew. And, like, I think what hurts me the most, like, two-sided, because maybe, you know, maybe we should have tried to push him more towards getting help. But, like, we've been doing that our whole fucking lives. We tried so hard to let him back into our lives. When he would take medicine, he would be great. There was a span of time when I was pregnant with Nancy, in like that first year of her life, he was there. He was taking medicine. He was, you know, I was cleaning his house for him, and he was buying baby stuff, and he loved Nancy so much. Like, those were some of the best times when he was taking medicine and taking care of himself, but he couldn't do it. He couldn't stay on that path. And some of it is like, I feel like I just didn't take the time to actually help. Like, that's what I feel like. I know logically, like, we had done everything we possibly could to keep him like on straight and narrow, for lack of a better term. We tried on and off all our lives, and we were met with hostility and violence in most situations. And it came a point in our lives where Nancy was old enough to see it. She started being afraid of him. And of course, there's some other, you know, where he busted through my house and bled everywhere and punched out windows and things. That was the last straw when he threatened Nancy. That was the end for me. And so I know, like, logically, I had plenty of reason to break that connection finally, permanently. But it still doesn't line up with being able to accept that he died alone and was just left there to rot, and nobody checked on him for weeks. Like, how can anybody ever accept that? Even if you hated a person, even if we genuinely hated him, which we didn't, we loved him and we have great stories of him, you know, how could you like ever break that down and be able to look at this bloody outline and reconcile that with our childhood and our father, you know? Like, so yeah, those are all the thoughts that were going in my head when I was just sitting there waiting for my flight and chain smoking. And so I finally got on my Nashville flight, and I was luckily at the very back of the plane, the last seat, in a single seat because it's a small plane. And I just sat there crying, like, just like trying to be quiet, because it was like on a plane with maybe 30 people, and just on and off sobbing the whole like hour flight. It's like hour from the time you board to the time you land, and was just on and off sobbing from then on out, and just fucking exhausted on top of all of it. And then of course, once I finally landed, you guys were already there waiting on me. So then I, you know, we hugged awkwardly because we don't hug in general. I feel like we do now. I think this is helping us actually be like, hey, I love you.
You're important to me. Well, it's also the distance thing. I was like, yeah. I feel like, what if this were the last chance that we got to hug each other and tell each other we love each other? So yeah. It's kind of more, it's made it different.
Yeah. Because, I mean, as much as we've talked about our childhood here, like, we aren't touchy-feely people. Our parents weren't that way. I've tried to specifically be touchy-feely with Nancy because I don't want her to be stunted like we are. Like, our parents don't get off the phone and say, I love you. They don't hug us. They never, or they didn't, you know. Like, that's just not how we were raised. But yeah, that was like the first thing we did was like hugged and threw our luggage in the back and went back to your house for a bit. Because then I rented a car because I didn't want to be reliant on people. I didn't know how long I was going to be there. I didn't know what to fucking do. So I'm like, I'm going to rent a car. I don't want to make you guys drive me back and forth.
And my vehicle is still not reliable at all. We started having problems with our vehicle and kind of scared more to drive it more than just in town, basically. But yeah, I picked her up from the airport and we got her rental car. And then after that, it was just me and her for a while. We went to meds first.
Yeah. I was out of my blood thinners and smoking and real safe. Let's just, you know, make this even worse. But, you know, yeah. So luckily my medicine was near the car rental place. And so we ate lunch and went and got my medicine and got supplies, because one of the other things our aunt forewarned us was the smell at his house was, she basically said, I've showered, I wore vapor rub, I've done everything I can, and I can't get that smell out of my out of my system.
And the truth is, you never do, because we figured that out. We found that out the hard way. It just randomly will hit you out of the blue.
Random things will smell even remotely close to it, and I'll start crying. So we stopped at Walgreens, and while we were in there getting my medicine, we got rubber gloves, masks, vapor rub.
Yeah.
And while we were in the Walgreens, I finally got a call back from the detective, because on and off throughout all of this, I had been trying to call different people and talk to them and figure out what we could or couldn't do, what they were thinking. And so we were in the middle of Walgreens when we get a call from the detective. And so, he just, says I'm sorry for your loss and things like that. And so I was asking are we allowed to go there? And he said, oh yeah, no, you're fine. I said, well, as far as the foul play, what do we do there? Do you guys have everything you need? And he said, oh, well, no, this is, we just think this is an old man who died at home. And I'm but my aunt mentioned that there was broken chairs and what looked like could have been a struggle. And he said, oh no, the whole house, the state of the house, we don't think there was anything wrong. And I'm okay. So part of me was relieved. They don't think anything happened. I'm starting to think, oh, thank fuck, we're not dealing with a fucking murder. But the other half of me is but really? I'm really going to need to see the house to understand that.
The difference is the coroner's the one that called for the autopsy for the suspicious. So I'm but if the coroner thinks there's enough suspicion to call for an autopsy, wouldn't you at least entertain that idea till the autopsy results come back?
Yeah. Yeah. And he he basically said, if the autopsy comes back with anything, then we'll talk about it. But what me and you were talking, that doesn't really make any sense. You're letting anybody and their mother in the house, it's just free reign now. Doesn't that mean any evidence there is going to be tampered with? So a lot of this was so conflicting from what you see on TV, and then obviously your infinite knowledge of true crime, it really didn't make any sense. But at this point, it had already happened. There was nothing we could do.
Yeah, the same scene had already been traipsed around by police, coroner, and our family. So
we at least had aunt, uncle, and cousin that had been in and out of the house multiple times. So at that point we were kind of both relieved, but also very confused and conflicted. So at that point we made plans. Our uncle was going to meet us there.
Yeah. But while we were eating lunch that day, we had discussed whether we wanted to go to the house, because we knew that it was going to be hard on a lot of levels, because we knew it was going to be hard because it's disturbing and the smell and all of those things. And then also on an emotional level, seeing it would make it even more real, and knowing that he died alone regardless, regardless of what actually happened, we knew seeing it would make it real.
Yeah.
But we decided that, honestly, we needed that sense of peace to see it for ourselves and try to understand what happened.
Yeah. And to kind of know what else we could do, what was the next steps to and this is to preface all of this too, and kind of what the detective was saying, our dad was absolutely not a cleanly person. We're talking literally never cleans anything.
He drops food. He would make messes and then never clean them up.
We used to have to try to clean his house, and it would be 2 days and it would be gross and horrible again. There was nothing anybody could have ever done to make that house quite livable. There had been times where there was maggots growing in an air fryer type thing he had, because he just didn't feel like cleaning it. He used to cook hamburgers in the same grease for weeks at a time because he just was too lazy. He would eat food and leave bowls. He would rebuy stuff instead of cleaning it. Every piece of mail he had had since he had bought that home was just everywhere. trash on the ground. You could see where he sit in this one chair always, and there was a pile of soda cans next to the chair where he just threw them. It used to be a garbage can, and then it was overflowing and just a mountain of cans. Like, it was, I wouldn't say a hoarder, unless you, like, a hoarder really keeps things, like possessions. This is like a trash hoarder, where they just never clean. There wasn't really like a crazy amount of stuff. It was just trash and food and dishes and medical supplies and needles and, you know, just like, because he was very unhealthy, took a lot of medicines. Like, so, like, I kind of knew what the detective was saying without him trying to, he was basically trying to say it politely by saying the state of the home. So we already knew that was going to be rough to see anyway, because it had been all our lives. But yeah, definitely needing to see it for ourselves and kind of know where we're going to go. Because one of the things we talked about is, like, if we really felt like this could be foul play, then we were going to fight harder to find some resolution.
And I want to go back and say, since we're going to talk about the house and stuff, like, it was the house, the property. We had lived there from, I was like 11 to 18 or something along those lines. And then you had lived there from like maybe 2 or 3 to adulthood or teenage years, I guess, because you moved with mom.
Well, on and off, yeah. I was like from 2 or 3 to age 9 and then back again as a teenager. And then obviously dad had somewhat visitation right throughout the years.
Yeah. But it was 7 acres with a little fishing pond that was at the edge of the woods. And we had a dilapidated furniture factory that dad and our uncle had started together. And it was just kind of run down now because it was basically just being used to store junk at this point. But the house was not original. It was a modular home, which, if you don't know what that is, that's a fancier version of a trailer.
Double wide, yeah.
Yeah. And we loved that land. But our childhood home had burned. And that's another story entirely. But the house itself didn't really mean anything to us, but the land did. And I just wanted to clear that up before we get to the scene and everything.
Yeah, I think just at that point, we ate our lunch and we, you know, head out as soon as we finally heard from our uncle and he was willing to meet us out there. And we had our little box of supplies. So I think what we got there first, and we were both really avoiding going in there. I don't even think Uncle Steve had made it yet. So you and I just kind of wandered the
land. No, they were there that day because they were loading stuff onto a trailer.
That's
our uncle and
cousin
that we had never even met before that day, that I remember anyway.
We might have met, I don't know, there's too many of us.
Yeah,
he looked vaguely familiar. So but yeah, so they were loading stuff, so we stood out there talking for a while, smoked, because Uncle Steve is like a chain smoker for our entire lives. And so he was telling us about everything, and that the stuff that Uncle Steve was telling us, like, I, like, as much as scarred as I am and fucked up from the whole situation, like, our uncle is the one that found him. His own brother, they're closest. They're only a couple years apart.
And they've always been, they've had fights and stuff on and off through the years, but they've always been close on and off.
They go fishing together all the time. You know, they farmed together. Our uncle was like one of the ones that really stayed in touch with him more consistently than the rest of the family, because dad was definitely the black sheep. So like him explaining like his story, you know, he hadn't heard from him in weeks. The last time he saw him was October 31st, that he had taken him to get some snacks at like Dollar General and dropped him back off with his snacks. And that was the last time he saw him. So we're talking October 31st to November 21st. We had no idea what happened in between. So he said he like came in and at first couldn't really see him. Cause he came there and the front door was like, or the side door, which is the only door accessible. Cause like the front porch barely has even steps, I think. But the door was cracked open.
No, and, he said it was wide open.
Oh, sorry. I just assumed. But yeah, no, so the door was
wide open.
Yeah. So dad's door was open. He walked in and kind of said he kind of saw it, but didn't process it, but then realized.
He said he saw his legs. He saw his legs, but it didn't compute.
Yeah.
What he was seeing didn't compute.
Yeah. But then he walked further in and saw him and said he like immediately ran out and kind of composed himself. And then I think was crying and freaking out. He didn't really explain too much to us, but then he said he came back in and talked to him and was like, what happened to you? Like, what happened? And I think at that point, you know, called the police and whatever else he had to do, might have called Aunt Martha.
And another, fact, let's stop right there. The fact that the door was wide open is already suspicious.
Yeah.
And he was also found completely nude.
So those were the first things we found out that were really odd and suspicious, because our dad was not a nude person. He was a tidy whities in a white t-shirt kind of person, but that's kind of how he sat and lived. And that's what, like, our uncle explained, like, even when nurses were coming to help him, which they had just stopped coming only a few weeks before the last time I saw him, our dad kept firing people. He did have some sort of, nursing group that would come, but he kept accusing them of stealing and hated them all. But he would just sit in his tidy whities in his chair, and then that's what he did. So nude and front door wide open.
And another thing is that he was found under the table. And when I say under the table, I don't mean I fell down and landed under the table. This is what we always had a hard time explaining when we did tell people about this. Like, we usually had to draw it out for them, and I probably will upload some pictures with this episode, which I will put a warning on, because if you don't want it, because I'm going to put that with the scene photos that we have. So I'm going to put a warning on the front of that on our Instagram so that nobody just comes across that. Because I don't want you to suffer through it unless you want to. Unless you have that morbid curiosity, which I do understand. But we'll have that with those photos, like a little diagram that Sabrina's going to draw, because she draws better than me. I can't draw stick people. He was not just under the table. The table was in the corner of his dining room, and his feet were pointed towards the corner of the room against the wall.
And he was 6 foot tall. So even aging, he was still going to be a pretty tall dude.
So we don't understand.
He walked with a walker and a cane the majority of the time too. So it wasn't like he would crawl and get under there himself.
But the fact that his feet were pointed towards the corner of the wall under the table right there just seems odd. And we still don't have an explanation for that. Somebody said, well, he was in Vietnam. Did he have flashbacks? Maybe he got under there or whatever. But to our knowledge, he has never had he has PTSD, but he never mentioned having flashbacks at any point.
Yeah.
And we never saw him have a flashback.
Yeah. And so what then continued, like, it just keeps getting weirder as the time went on. Another thing we found out was like an exercise machine that had been in a spot like in another part of the room for a long time. Even the last time I was there, this exercise bike had been against this like middle of the, like an island wall kind of thing. And Uncle Steve said that exercise bike was pushed up against the table, blocking his body from view. So not only was he in a position that would be really hard for an older man, mobility challenged, sickly, diabetic, like for him to be under the table, feet facing the wall. That wasn't even like a banana peel slip possibility of him getting under there, especially with an exercise bike pushed up against him. Like, also, you know, someone said, well, maybe he was on the exercise bike naked. He was not on a recumbent bike naked. He had never used that bike, and he would not be a male on a bike naked. So no, we don't think he was riding the bike and fell, because yet again,
it was
that would have been a different, that would have been a whole different scenario altogether. And on, you know, the other weird part is, you know, again, one of the things that was mentioned to us before we got there was the dining chairs were, there was broken dining chairs. Well, our uncle said the last time he was there, all chairs were accounted for and still sitting there. So what happened with the dining room chairs that they were broken and strewn
and,
up?
And about? We do admit, since he had a temper, that he could have just broken those himself. But it's just odd that the last time our uncle was there, between that short few weeks, whatever happened to the chairs happened. So, you know, it's odd that it happened during that time period, I guess. So it's just another piece of the puzzle that we don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
And, but we admit it could have been him, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, with all of the health issues he had some heart issues. We know that he had the spinal issues. He's diabetic. I mean, one thing he had always said to us, that if he ever killed himself, he would specifically overdose on insulin so that it would look like an accident, so that we would still get money. But the odd thing there is he never had, like, and this is going to be my PSA for everyone. He doesn't have a will. He has no life insurance. There's nothing for us to get from this situation. So we really don't feel he did this to himself, because what would anybody gain from that? Not that that's obviously a reason for anybody to go, but at that point, what he had always said didn't line up.
Yeah.
For him to have, you know.
But anyway, we kept stalling on going in for a while, and we finally suited up and went. And then that's when, when we say we sobbed before, we didn't sob. The worst of it came when we went in for the first time, because it's not just the smell and seeing the scene and everything, but then we started seeing everything else.
Yeah, I think when we first walked in, I was specifically trying not to go straight to the area, because for one, I was scared of it. And for two, I would feel like that would be like too morbid. And like, I didn't want the morbid curiosity to take front of the grieving, if that makes sense. Because I already, again, all that guilt and grief combining together. But I, you know, at the same time, I needed to see it to know that it was real. Like, but like, so I was like specifically walking around it and kind of glancing out of the corner of my eye, because I knew I wouldn't be able to just like walk up. So then I think you and I both kind of just stood there for a minute when we finally like looked up close, and then we walked away, and then just like, I think we both just took opposite directions around that like center wall and then met back up, and I just immediately just went to hug you, because I was just like, I need my sister. And then yeah, we both started bawling our fucking eyes out.
Yep. And I remember Uncle Steve was like trying to talk to us from another room, and he didn't realize we were in there bawling. And he's just like having regular conversation with us, and we're in there like, shut up, Uncle Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then,
sorry.
Yeah. You know, you're probably about to say the same thing. Then we started noticing that he still had pictures of Nancy, Sabrina's child, his only granddaughter, everywhere.
Yeah. Everything that he had ever bought for her was still in its exact places. Her coloring books were in the drawer of his TV stand. I think you even had a Facebook memory come up recently that literally showed her coloring at Dad's house. So those coloring books were still there. there's pictures up of her everywhere in every single room other than bathrooms. Like her pictures were everywhere. There was like a little car thing that he had bought her in the closet, and her own little fishing pole. It was like, cause that was supposed to be like her storage closet, like of her stuff. And it was all still sitting there. And like all the pictures of us were down. They were like in a pile, like pictures of like us when our parents were still married, and like pictures of me and you and like our ex-husbands. They're just like in a shitty stack collecting dust. But Nancy's pictures were still up everywhere.
But it absolutely broke me, because I know how bad he wanted to be in her life. And it just absolutely broke me, knowing that he didn't get to reconnect with her. And I just completely lost it.
I mean, because
this would continue to happen throughout that week, because we kept going back to clean and stuff. And we would find something and it would trigger us, and we would go smoke and we would cry. And like, it just all week that long, that's what kept happening. But that moment right there, like after just seeing the outline of his body and then seeing how much he loved Nancy, just tore me apart. And it still does when I think about it.
I mean, yeah. And Nancy has like enormous guilt as well, because I mean, she came later in the week. She was actually already scheduled and had flights to come to town anyway to see her dad and his family for Thanksgiving. So she was just dealing with all of that alone, because I wasn't there and she was with her dad, and she wasn't going to be able to come see me or help deal with it until like Friday of the week. So, and even then, hearing all of that, and I think her seeing it as well once she was finally able to visit, like, has wrecked her pretty hard as well. But yeah, it's just, but it also angered me. Like, I had extreme sadness and extreme guilt that I kept her from him. Which I didn't. It's the same kind of stipulation I had with our mom. Nancy does visit our mom now, even though I don't have a relationship with her. I always told Nancy, like, if you really, really wanted to look into seeing him, then I would really have to figure that out. I would have to create some guidelines or make it where he met us in a public place. It wouldn't be his house. I sure as hell wasn't going to find out where we lived. You know, I'd really have to figure out a way to make that work if she really did. But she was, honest to God, so afraid of him. Because the last time she saw him, he was yelling and busting through windows, cursing at us, and on her birthday. And so she couldn't do it. So I had all that sadness and guilt of that, but I was also fucking pissed, like, which made me feel bad too, but I was mad because, like, the thing that really gets me is seeing all of that, seeing everything. He still cared about her, apparently still talked about her all the time. And I'm like, then why didn't you fucking get help? Like, the last time we saw him, we went to the courts over the situation from her birthday. And even the judge said, man, see somebody, get some help. Something is wrong with you. And she pulled me aside and said, you're going to regret it if you don't get some help and he dies. And wow, thanks, lady, because, you know, I think about that conversation now a lot too. But how could I? Like, he's broken himself out of hospitals and mental facilities and been mad at whoever helped him get there before. So he, say we did get him some help and he was doing better. Well, if he slipped again, then he'd be pissed at us. Like, it just makes me angry. And I know part of that is his mental health, but if you loved us so much, why didn't you fucking get help? Why didn't you want to be in our lives? You know, that's what I'm pissed about.
Yeah.
Obviously.
No, I feel the same way. It's this whole situation that week. I felt every emotion, like, and it was exhausting. Like, it's, you don't realize how exhausting it is to switch emotions so much because that's what we did all week. We were sad. We were mad. We were guilty. We were, you know, and confused and trying to process this crazy scene that could have possibly been a murder and possibly not. And we knew that realistically. Me being a true crime junkie, I didn't want it to be a murder, but there were so many red flags that it's hard to not want to know. And I felt like we also needed to know what happened for closure, you know, and the puzzle was just a nonstop loop in my head for months.
It still happens randomly.
Well, it still happens, but it's not as much anymore. But it's for months, it was just plagued me. It was just this nonstop puzzle on a loop in my head, trying to fit the pieces together, and they never fit anything. But basically, I don't know. Do you have anything to add from that? The hunt for the jacket, because that's the day we looked for the jacket too.
Yeah.
And we had been told that his wallet was missing and stuff too, so we were looking for any high dollar items, his wallet, anything like that, to see, and guns to make sure all that stuff was accounted for, because we thought maybe this was potential robbery. Because no matter who did it, we leaned towards the idea that it was one of these women that he had been seeing and had let live there and clean his house, you know, and take care of him and stuff. There was one in particular that we were told that she brought her son there and was living there shortly and had her son calling him dad and stuff like that. And then she stole a couple of $1,000 from him. So we automatically leaned towards that because it was sort of recent. It was a recent development. So it made sense because, I mean, even though there would be a ton of technical, you know, suspicious people in his life, that was kind of our starting point of theories because it made sense. Like maybe this girl came back to get some more money out of him, or maybe sent somebody or brought a boyfriend or, you know, something to beat him up and take some money or whatever, you know. So that's all we had to go on at the beginning, is we thought, you know, well, there's missing items and stuff, but we did recover most of the missing items. We never did find his, what is it called? It's a flight jacket or whatever.
Yeah, his flight jacket.
He has one of those really nice,
like aviator leather.
The leather bomber jacket. With all the patches on it and everything. And we always thought it was cool. And Sabrina said that was the number one thing she wanted out of his stuff.
Yeah, I was looking for three things: his jacket, his photo album from Vietnam, and he had this like yearbook type thing from Vietnam as well, from his, from the Marines. And so Uncle Steve, we knew we were going to say their names at some point.
Well, we already said it like six times now.
Yeah, sorry, I've been trying
Uncle Steve.
he found those things immediately. And he was like, well, the jacket's hanging up in his closet. And like, I'm like, no, it's not. Like, I would know that jacket from a mile away. I even know what it smells like still. Because I grew up thinking like, I want to be big one day and wear that jacket. Didn't want to be this big, guys. Thanks for those jeans. But yeah, so the jacket wasn't there. So then we went out to the building. He said, well, sometimes he would get mad and put the stuff back out here. But we searched high and low as best as you can in a building with no lights and just flashlights and piles of decades of family members' junks that get chunked out there. Like, the jacket is nowhere to be found. Nobody's found it so far. So that sucked, but at least I was able to find the yearbook and the photo album, which are sitting right behind me now. They have their little place on a shelf, and I was able to find another, like a button up shirt that he had from when he was in like the Air Force Reserve that says our name on it and everything. So he, you know, I was able to find a few things that just, it really sucked that like that was the number one thing that meant a lot to me that we couldn't find.
Yeah. But basically another thing was that since my uncle, our uncle had took him for snacks, those snacks were untouched, which means that it probably, whatever happened, happened probably October 31st or November 1st, because he was a diabetic, but he was really bad about eating tons of stuff. And it was like Hostess cupcakes and things like that. So he would have opened and eaten some of those.
Yeah, he was a junk food junkie. Like he would open those types of boxes before he even like got home most of the time and eat like three cupcakes on the drive from the store. Like the fact that they weren't touched at all tells us it was potentially 3 weeks of him being there.
Another thing that I wanted to discuss is just like everything else about the scene too. Like there were clothes that were thrown off in the bathroom. We don't know if that's why he ended up naked. We don't know why he threw the clothes off. There was a blood smear on the wall in between the kitchen and the living room that we don't know if that was there prior or not. But we assume it must have been prior because we don't know how he would have got it because it was across the room. So I don't know why he would have already been bleeding and not get other blood everywhere. But there was blood spatter all over his house from other incidences, I guess. But so it made it a really difficult scene to decipher. There was flour in the floor by the table. We found his glasses in the floor, missing a lens. We never found the missing lens. So we even theorized that, like, was he down there searching for the lens that fell out or something? But we never found the other lens, so we don't know if that's even a thing. You know? Like, it just got, the more we looked at the scene, the more weird it got, and it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense that it was an accident. It didn't make sense that it was natural. It didn't make sense that it was murder. Like, none of it added up to either one in particular. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, and also another thing we found was his water heater was broken. So we thought, well, maybe that contributed somehow. You know,
I think my best theory, what I could come up with and what I've tried to stick to in my head is, since the door was open, my thought was, so he was prone to have bathroom accidents, dying rear accidents, as I call them. So our thought was, what if he went to go somewhere, had an accident, came home, busted the door open, took his clothes off, went to shower, the water heater was busted. So he was coming out to figure out why he didn't have hot water and something occurred then. But that could have really, at that point, been something occurred as in somebody was in the house. Because for him to leave the door open knowing full well he was about to go shower doesn't really make sense either. Maybe something happened then and that's why he's naked. Or maybe he slipped and fell and hit his head and... You know, like, that's just the best theory I could come with to get him to where he was and naked. But it's still, like you said, still doesn't add up all the other elements, like, where's his other glasses lens, unless it was on his person or something and taken away. Like, it didn't make any sense.
And also with the chairs, another thing I gotta say, the chairs, while they were close, they were not close enough to the body that if he fell, they should have still been in place. They were moved away. Two of the broken chairs looked like they had been thrown into the edge of the living room. And then I think one or two were in the other corner of the room. Like they weren't near the body.
Well, something we have to keep in mind too, that, that I did kind of think about later, and what, I think the coroner had told me, was they had to move some things to even get him out of there.
Yeah.
So what we even walked into had already been tampered with to some extent, because the table wasn't in the exact same spot and they had to move chairs to move the table to get to remove his body. So, but again, the way that the thing that stuck with me most was the way the chairs were broken. They weren't like snapped. Like, you'd think if there was something that happened or he got angry and smashed some chairs, they would be broken. But they were all just pulled out of their, like, sockets. You know how, like, there'll be the, like, a routed-in hole and glued into them? They were just pulled apart. They weren't broken, per se. I even would, as far as I put every chair back together to make sure there wasn't any missing parts, because we were going that crazy at one point that we were just so confused that we were literally trying to understand what the heck happened.
Yeah. All right, we're at 50 minutes, so I think we're going to wrap this episode, and we'll continue on in the next episode. So tune in for more theories and ponderings and grief, whatever
and
else.
Heartache and confusion and anger.
Mm-hmm. All of the things. Tune in for all of the things.